Good morning, everyone. Just a year ago, the celebration of Thanksgiving here in the United States coincided with some horrible events unfolding on the other side of the world in Mumbai, India. The people of that city were in the midst of a massacre initiated by terrorists. More than 10 coordinated shooting and bombing attacks across the city killed nearly 200 people and wounded at least 300. And it was a siege that went on for days. Here's someone the BBC spoke to right after the attacks last year.
There was blood everywhere. I was drenched in blood. But, I mean, I came out of it. All I had was like a little bump on my head. When I got down to the floor and when the guy who pushed me to the floor said to me, stay down, keep quiet, then that's when I realised that there must be some kind of a terrorist attack.
A terrorist attack indeed, and it was an attack that at least held the potential to bring all-out war between India and Pakistan. That hasn't happened in the year since, but a lot has happened since. And here to talk about what happened then and what's going on now are Linda Blake, contributor to the Wall Street Journal in Mumbai. We welcome back to the program. And Felix Ambrose, who works in an internet cafe in Mumbai, right across from the Leopold Cafe, which was one of the bloodiest scenes of the attacks in Mumbai. And Felix Ambrose actually helped to rescue people from the massacre last year. Felix and Linda, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Felix, what are your memories a year later, and how are you feeling about this day?
This day is like for prayers for the souls who died, and then the memories are being revived back again and again and again. But today was a special day for prayers with candlelight, and people just thinking about what happened last year. And they're just looking on at each other what's happening, signing some memories and all that.
And Linda Blake, who's a contributor for the Wall Street Journal, as you pointed out at the top of the hour, the government is making something of a show of force in some of the commemorative events today, the parades today. But it's worth noting a year ago just how disoriented everyone was. Listen to this voice from right after the attacks.
They wanted anyone with British or American passports. Say anyone who had a British or American passport, they wanted to know. So I guess they were after foreigners, yeah?
Linda Blake, do you recall the disorientation and how long it took for people to realize what was actually transpiring here and who is responsible?
Well, the fact is that it was a 60-hour siege. We're talking about 3 days. And what really happened is sort of a lack of accountability and a lack of response when it came to the police forces. There was a RAND report released, you know, RAND being a U.S. think tank, and they pointed out that India's National Security Guards, who are supposed to be the elite rapid response team, they didn't show up at the scene until 5 hours after the attacks had commenced, at which point these men had already killed numbers of people in various locations across the city. We're talking tourist locations, tourist-packed restaurants like Leopold Cafe that was just pretty much saturated. It was a blood slip and slide, really, really hard and heart-wrenching things to see. You look outside the Taj Hotel, which is really an icon of India, right next to the gateway, and it was in flames, and people just stood outside with their mouths open. So the fact is there was a slow response time, and all that was happening at once in this coordinated siege just took people by surprise. I spoke to the Joint Police Commissioner of Crime, Rakesh Maria, here, and even he said it was a failure of imagination. A failure of imagination. No one expected such an attack to occur.
Felix Ambrose, if you'll let me, I want to take you back to a year ago. Here's Farhang Jahani, who's the owner of the Leopold restaurant, the cafe that's right across from your travel agency. This is how Farhang described what was going on in his cafe on that fateful day a year ago.
All my customers that were sitting on the table didn't know what was happening, and it was like firecrackers, and did they realize very soon that it wasn't? It was just bullets flying. A grenade was thrown into the restaurant, which, yes, blew, two of my waiters died.
And here is Farhang Jahani interviewed by our own Farai Chidea yesterday, a year after the events.
As I pulled up my shutter on the fourth day, I wanted to prove to the terrorists I won, they lost, because they could not shut me down. So this is what I would like everybody all over the world to know. Bounce back. Don't let them overpower you. Don't let things around you become a nightmare in your life.
Felix Ambrose, your internet cafe across from Farhang's restaurant there. Are you feeling as though you've bounced back in the year since the attacks?
I bounced back just in a couple of days. But you see, the memories which I saw, it was like coming back to me. But I'm a very strong guy because I've seen wars 65 and 71. And I was there during the Operation Desert Storm in Bahrain. So I know the sounds of bombs and, you know, all these kind of things.
Are you more fearful or less fearful that something like this can happen again
in
Mumbai?
I'm really fearless because it can happen anytime and you have to be ready for it.
You know, here is a female citizen from Mumbai, Linda, someone that you talked to today. Listen to what she had to say, and then I want to ask you an important question about what didn't happen in the year since the Mumbai attacks.
You know, I think terror in India, especially in Bombay, you know, the city has so many scars, and terror in this city is a mind game. Because in our imagination, the city as a whole has this imagination, which plays such an important role. Imagination is the most powerful weapon that a terrorist has.
Imagination is the most powerful weapon the terrorists have. Linda Blake, why did the terrorists not succeed in provoking all-out chaos and war between India and Pakistan, do you think?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, you're looking at two nuclear powers, and in essence, they've neutralized each other since both went nuclear, and that's just point blank.
And do you think that this idea that imagination is the weapon, is it a blunter weapon today? Did the terrorists show that they actually couldn't achieve their aims?
Well, here's something we have to understand about Mumbai citizens, is that they bounce back, as Felix himself said, he bounced back in about 3 days. And the majority of them do possess a bit of fear, but they've been through this before. You know, 2611, as they refer to the Mumbai terror attacks here, was not the 9/11 of India. In the way that 9/11 impacted Americans, that new roles had been created, that they couldn't leave their homes without that sense of fear, this war on terrorism that had been incited, you know, just 2006, a couple of years before this massive attack on India, this three-day siege that we had last year, there were more people dead in that attack alone on the railroad station. So we have to look at the fact that this falls within the context of a larger stream or strand of terror attacks across Mumbai.
Right, indeed. Felix Ambrose and Linda Blake, thanks so much for being with us. Felix Ambrose is a freelance travel consultant and works in an internet cafe in Mumbai. Excuse me. Linda Blake, do you think you'll ever celebrate Thanksgiving without thinking of the attacks last year?
Not a chance. But I will say that when I go take my meal at Leopold Cafe tonight, I'll be sitting alongside the bullet holes still there in the mirrors as a reminder of strength and perseverance in the face of terror and adversity.
Linda Blake, contributor for The Wall Street Journal in Mumbai, remembering the attacks a year ago. Thanks to both of you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.